And we're back.
Welcome to episode 265 of No Direction, the No Direction Network's Pathfinder News, Reviews, and Interviews podcast. I'm Ryan Costello.
And I'm Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Perrin.
Before the days of 3D printers in 50% of the homes of the hosts of this podcast, forgetting the perfect mini for your character meant either starting with the mini or extensively kitbashing it. Then Hero Forge came along. Suddenly the game changed, and then the game kept changing. So here to tell us all about how they keep changing the game, how they stay ahead of this new space that they carved in the gaming industry, in the gaming hobby, is the CEO of Hero Forge, Tegan Morrison.
Very happy to join you guys. Very excited to talk about Hero Forge. It's been quite the journey. Right as you said that, I had a little power outage.
Oh no.
One of my lights is not very happy about that, so give me a second to fix that.
All right, well.
It's going to become one of our cursed podcasts.
There we go. Look at that. Literally, it was flickering in a kind of a very horror style scenario. Lovely to be here.
At this point, Hero Forge has kind of become like an institution in the role-playing game hobby space, but that hasn't always been the case. How did you all think to get this thing going in the first place?
It's wild to imagine that it has become that. Because I feel like in a sort of like a grandmother watching a child grow up, it's like, oh my gosh, how you've grown. I didn't see that coming kind of thing. Every time we look at Hero Forge, we're just like, oh, we've come so far. Once upon a time, it was a collection of friends playing their very first game of Dungeons & Dragons.
And when was that?
In fact, the story of Hero Forge is a Christmas story, so it's very appropriate. We can talk about it now. I know it's very sweet. And it was born out of kindness and gift giving when one of our friends and co-founders of Hero Forge, Joshua Bennett, wanted to get everybody in this very first D&D campaign a miniature, the very first miniature. And he was like, and he sort of went through the kind of the process of looking online, trying to match everybody's characters as best we could. We did all the research, and everybody, while very like warmed by this gesture, no one quite ended up with the right character for them. I was playing an orc cleric, which is just on face value a difficult miniature to acquire. And I wanted it to be so right, so correct. So I even wanted the weapons to be the right ones. And I ended up kitbashing this miniature from the gifts that I was given for Christmas, gluing maces where swords used to be. And that experience really, I guess, just shone a light on how powerful it would be to be able to do that online. When Josh came to me one day, and I just sort of remember this earnest look on his face, he's like, what if there was a Kickstarter for this thing we're trying to do? What if, and the very first seed of Hero Forge was, what if it was just a bunch of like body parts and weapons that you could then kitbash and glue together? And me coming from video games, I used to be art director for a video game company called Naughty Dog. I was like, well, what if it was more like a video game character creator?
So hold on a second. You were with Naughty Dog. That's, I had no idea there was a connection there. What? Just talk about that.
Sure. Yeah. This was born, Hero Forge was born out of Christmas break in between projects at Naughty Dog. So I believe I was lead technical artist on Uncharted 3. And this was sort of the break between projects, get a little bit of downtime. I've always made something big in the break between Uncharted 2 and 3. I'd made a first-person shooter for fun. So this was going to be the next
thing. That game is called Doom.
Never saw the light of day. That one was a learning process. And in fact, most of these projects I do for fun, I don't expect them to do anything. But we wanted this to exist so badly that we kind of started this, I guess, testing the waters, this Kickstarter at that time.
And that makes a lot of sense too, because I remember like before like Hero Forge, before, you know, even a lot of character software that exists now, me and my friends would always like try to design up our characters in City of Heroes or something, and then just take screenshots and then make them into little paper miniatures.
Right? The character creators in video games were amazing. But in this realm of imagination, the characters you could get were in lots of ways the least imaginative. They were all pre-made. and very limited in scope. So it's lovely to kind of, well, to bring a tool that can kind of at least attempt to match that imagination.
I'm just going to defend the miniatures manufacturers. They make a lot of miniatures. It's just that there are infinite possibilities and there's only so many miniatures you can make.
Yes, you're completely right. They make a lot.
I'm going to condemn miniature manufacturers. There are infinite possibilities, but they seem to really like to make human barbarian 70,000 times and an orc cleric once.
That's very true. As soon as you take two unusual factors together, and let's face it, we're all playing characters with a lot of unusual factors because they're more fun that way. As soon as you take two, finding a miniature even for that is going to be a challenge.
Yeah, I almost exclusively play strange combination characters, and so I can just show now my first Hero Forge is of Karkarkast, my gnome barbarian who dual wields hammers. That is not a miniature I would ever be able to find on the shelf, and the fact that I have one of my most iconic characters, one of my favorite characters I've ever played, like even just as a collector piece, let alone as a fully playable miniature piece, that, you know, it means something to me. It really elevated my hobby when I got the opportunity to make a figure like that.
That is a beautiful first Hero Forge miniature. It's so appropriate for the creator. And we realized right from launch that you could already hit more variety than existed in sort of the entire, at least, player character miniature space. And we've only been adding since then. Oh, gosh.
So we were talking earlier, when we mentioned that we both had our first generation Hero Forge miniature, you were surprised that they were still in one piece. And if people check, yeah, even the hilts of the hammers are in one piece. But that was notorious. That was Hero Forge's reputation early on, that it's like, it's a great customizing experience and it's a great collector piece, but do not expect to get much play out of them. But that no longer holds true. Like, this is one that I got a couple of years ago, and it is solid and sturdy, and I played with him all the time. He traveled with me because he was a PFS character. So how did you address some of the early concerns and keep addressing the concerns people have with the Hero Forge miniature quality?
Yeah, let's talk about kind of just the arc and march of technology and human progress. Well, when it comes to, in this case, making tiny little figures.
Well, what were those first gen made out of?
Right. So the very first Kickstarter we did, as in this Christmas break project between friends, was like, it was an experimental procedure of sending off to get prints. We were like, so let's send off some prints to different manufacturers, we'll get some back. And we didn't have any idea what we were going to get back. Like, we'd never seen a 3D printed miniature before. This was back before people could really afford to get miniature printers in their house. And we sent off these test prints. I believe the very first test print ever was an orc with its arms out like this, individual fingers splayed out. Let's just say not all of them came back. And then just a bunch of little bits of detail on the base to like try to figure out what miniature detail means in the 3D printed manufacturing space. So we sent this file out and got it back maybe like a month later, just not knowing if this would be even slightly viable. And I remember gathering around, and this was in the original Frosted Ultra detail that we first started printing in. We gathered around this figure, this tiny little like glimmer of possibility, and said, yeah, this could be a real thing. And then probably one of the fingers snapped off and we were like, but it's going to be very precious and very fragile. But like, that's kind of the time to start this thing. It's like just when it's viable. It's not perfect yet. It's going to grow into itself, but it can be very real. So we got excited and we started working on the Kickstarter, which honestly at that point was tied together by tape and string.
So Param and I earlier were talking about how a lot of people that get into 3D printing, especially when they come from video games, don't necessarily know the difference between the needs of a video game 3D model and a physical space 3D model. And so they'll make very fragile, digits, fragile weapons. So was that an early concern, or at what point did you catch on to the differences between 3D and physical space miniatures?
I think, I mean, even from that very, very first print we ever did, it was an exploration into like what's possible, what's going to hold up, what's going to be strong. So we very quickly geared towards something which ends up being positive in every sense, as far as I'm concerned, which is you want big forms and big artistic details that read really well on a tabletop. you want that anyway for a miniature. You want them to be nice and paintable and exaggerated. And all of that helps immensely with the durability and 3D printing element of it. So we realized that our art direction and the technology could dovetail together. And we went through, we're still learning even to this day, but we went through an extensive period of understanding the materials, understanding the ways things broke. We still take surveys to this day of returns that happen far less frequently now because of breakages, so that we can mitigate them and work on the various different materials and the various ways in which they're like vulnerable. But oh my gosh, it's come so far.
I can't say also from early on, since you brought it up, the customer service at Hero Forge has been amazing. So my friend Kathy, the first time she ordered a Hero Forge miniature, for whatever reason, the shirt that she had chosen did not register and it was printed topless. And she wanted a fighter with armor. And so
sometimes you just got to lean into the randomness.
So anyway, you replaced it right away and with no issues at all. And that was just it's nice when your first experience with the company is not great, but your second experience fixes what the first experience was wrong.
We're always improving that kind of thing. There's always going to be the little glitch here and there. And we wanted to have the kind of customer experience that we would want from a company. So it was kind of a no-brainer to try to be really, really good with our return policies. If your mini breaks, we will send you a new one. If there's something especially our fault, like accidentally removing the top, that's one of the more awkward accidents. I've got a few other stories like that. A huge shout out to Donna, who was a friend and came on really early in the Hero Forge process. She had gone through law school, had worked in a big top law firm, and then said, I'm burnt out. I want to do something entirely different. And I was like, we're starting this company. You want to come on board, like, and set some foundational stuff? And she set the foundation for our whole like customer experience pipeline and really like did an incredible job.
You know, sometimes I get a little burnout or tired and I go on Hero Forge to just play around to, you know, reset myself. But she took that to a whole new level.
right. Just like, okay, I guess I'll just work there. though her story really mimics a lot of like our friends coming on board. It's been just such a heartwarming thing to be able to just snowball a bunch of friends making a thing, because we started that way and our networks in Los Angeles, the city of dreams, were extensive. So we've hired so many people we knew who were kind of top of their field, top of their game, and like wanted somewhere like more nurturing and more wholesome. And it's been wonderful.
So you talked about when you knew the technology was viable, but when did you really realize this company is viable?
That was the Kickstarter. A huge shout out to everybody who supported on Kickstarter. Like when a fresh faced company comes to Kickstarter and says, please, can we make this thing? We really earnestly ask that question. Like, do you want this to exist? We'd love to make it. We want it to exist. And the internet and everyone who supported us from the start said, yes, that thing, make that thing. And we were like, sweet, we will. And that was just such a joyous occasion, because I'd brought on friends, I'd taken risks, I'd kind of staked some weight and reputation on this thing potentially working. And to be able to sit around watching that Kickstarter meet our wildest expectations and realize that we were going to get to work together, and just that celebration, that feeling was palpable. It was a beautiful thing.
Now, one of the early things about the about Hero Forge that stood out for me was indeed like a kind of focus on quality of user experience quality, because at the time, to be really nice about it, a lot of software designed in the RPG sphere was by enthusiasts for enthusiasts. And Hero Forge was simple to use. Like, it was fun to just click through and, like Ryan said, and just see what you can make. Like, when did that decision come in to, like, take that extra effort to make this easy?
You do a really good summary of what we saw the industry was like, too, in that you had just this incredible passion and incredible love for the craft. But it ended up being a lot of hobby projects, a lot of like things that were made for personal use more than kind of general use. And my background in video games, AAA games, we had to make these so usable. And I've watched thousands of hours of users trying to play Uncharted, all of our iterations there, and our failures and successes that gradually like congealed into a very, very playable game, I hope, really stuck with me. So when it came time to make this character creator in this space that didn't traditionally have something like such a good user experience, it right from the start was one of our highest priorities. And I remember one of our early beta demos, we were at Gen Con, and I think it was a 6-year-old girl comes up and says, "How can I try this?" And we handed her this iPad and said, "Be careful with this." And she had no problem at all using Hero Forge. And I was like, "Yes. Yes, this is what we want." We want like that light, her face lighting up with excitement as some of her choices started to matter and feel impactful. That was a wonderful like kind of validation that yes, we want this to be that accessible. That said, over time, given everyone's demand, we have added some features that are so hardcore and so difficult to use, that we've had to boil down to their very essence to even get them that far. And oh my gosh, do we have some things planned that will that will be the most advanced features by a magnitude on Hero Forge.
Well, let's start talking about some of the features you've added. There's definitely been like obvious generations of Hero Forge where like it has gotten significantly better. Can you walk us through some of those early generations or early big advancements?
Sure, yeah. The team was just two or three people at first, and not even myself. I was still full-time finishing the art direction for Uncharted 4. And during those kind of scrappy days of just getting something out, that was sort of the bare minimum across the board. It was an incredibly difficult process to launch a website. So we were very focused on that. And at some point after wrapping Uncharted 4, I came on full-time. I was like, people are loving this. It's got so much potential. We need to take this as far as we can. And we just kept iterating. It's been a very different experience from my prior ones, where we'd work for like 2.5 years or 3 years. We'd work so hard on this game. We'd crunch like crazy near the end. We'd put it out to the world. And then just a big sigh of relief. We'd let it go. Hero Forge quickly became this thing that we realized we were going to iterate on and improve forever. Like, there was no end to how powerful everyone's imagination is, and we will just spend the rest of our lives in a way trying to give people the tools to match their imagination. So we iterated and iterated and iterated. The big jumps came when we had 2.0 and color. Like, that was the biggest jump, and in order to support color, I rewrote the whole UI. A bunch of other incredible devs rewrote whole parts of the systems in order to get it performant and to work with that kind of technology. So 2.0 was really a big refresh, but we'd been iterating a little bit constantly. And now we're in this cadence where every single month we do a code update of the site. It comes with a bunch of things always, sometimes little, sometimes big. And those are all put in place to support the content which we release every week. We're putting stuff out every single week that's in the form of new art most of the time.
Right before 2.0, I remember it started to feel like there were Hero Forge imitators and some competition coming up. And then 2.0 gets announced and it's like, they're already so far ahead of what everyone else is doing.
That's what we've been trying to do, I suppose. We were the first on the scene. We have an incredible team of artists and programmers, and we will be barreling ahead at a rate that I hope there's no competition out there. We want to be the go-to place for custom miniatures.
So I think a great example of how you're constantly innovating is what's going on right now on your social media, where you've got the adventure calendar and you're opening a box and showing new options every day.
We love puns. It's mostly for the pun. That's the main reason for the adventure calendar.
Well, thank you for that. But also, I like that you've got 31 days of new content. And in between, you're like, by the way, we've also got this new sitting pose. That's not one of the doors. We've got 31 pieces of new content and other new content fitting in between the gaps. You just fill up this program with new options on such a regular basis that it becomes just like, it just grows exponentially.
We did want the holiday season to be a bit of a kind of a bonanza. And at some point, of course, we had the questions like, do we need to do our Treasure Tuesday release, which is what we've been calling them? Do we do our Tuesday releases still? And we didn't want to make it feel like it was an either or. So we were like, no, it's just going to be a wonderful month of, of presents for everybody.
Yeah. How do you all, like, what is that development process like of idea to art to model? Because you all have adapted very quickly to new trends, like not to say specifically like popular book increases demand for elephant people or bugs that have four arms. And then you all 3 weeks later, hey, look, you can build elephant people and bugs with four arms.
We've always got our eye on a kind of a smorgasbord of just races and representation that we can add to the site. Like there's a big list of wants, but it's fair to say that we start with user asks. So we have a request survey that users can go fill out, and we get so much data that way. Now, any one user asking for one specific thing, I'm sorry, you might have a little way to wait for that. But we do, on a regular basis, digest that data into a pretty big presentation that we really, like, we take to heart. We take the big trends, and we try to make what users want. An interesting thing has been happening with that process, which is, as time has gone on, we get more and more requests, not less. And those requests get more and more specific and unique and weird and just like kind of off the wall. So I think that's a good sign. We've been hitting all of the core things that people are like, I really need an elephant person to represent my character. Great, we've got it. And now they're like, oh, I really need a staff with a rubber ducky on the end because my elephant is a bathomancer. And we're like, okay, well, while we might not add that specifically, we do have our eye at this point on tools that let people make any kind of crazy stuff they can imagine. So,
oh, really?
With time, Hero Forge, you will be able to do mind-boggling things more so than you can already.
I mean, if you take a look,
I have a feeling. Go ahead, Barb.
If you take a look at some of your fan groups, they're already managing to do some mind-boggling things with the software that it was never meant to do. Like, ever since you all added the ability to add like multiple arms, it's just like items just start popping up and every, like, can we fold this arm inside, backwards, and upside down inside their belly, and then make this item pop out their hip so we have an extra belt slot? Or can we turn this entire thing into a mech with a gnome piloting it? That was one that kind of blew the socks off of me.
I love the gnome mechs. They were amazing. And they all come from this idea that, like, we gave them some tools, like with a tail holding a weapon, users were like, we can do anything with this. Though, of course, limited by the length of the tail. And it's very difficult to pose a tail through the body and have, you know, something sitting on your shoulder using that technique. Seeing the innovation, seeing the minis that appear that we don't know how users made them.
Wow.
like whenever I come across one of those, I'm like, I made this system. I don't know how that was made. When I came across one of those, I'll share it with the team. I'll be like, check this out. Someone made a piano.
And the good news is,
it's just a piano sitting. It's got some nice candles on it. It's beautiful. Don't know how that was made.
The good news is, if they share a link, you can save it to your heroes. You can make your own piano. You can modify the piano if it's like, I need a piano, but I need it to be pink.
Yep, pretty much. So our users are already blowing way past our wildest expectations for what's possible. And we see what they want. And we are developing tools right now that look a lot more ironically like traditional miniature kit bashing, where you can kind of just stick things places.
Oh, Kitsune Warlock in chat is saying, the first person to invent paint never expected the Mona Lisa.
I mean, that's what we hope. We hope to invent more paint and for our users to continue to make Mona Lisas, because, oh my gosh, the creations are works of art at this point. When you combine the color and the lighting and the creativity together, we get things that just blow our minds.
So I want to go back to what you were saying about user-submitted requests, because going back to my Alchemist Brawler here, he has what's called a pressboy hat, similar to what Param's wearing. And when I first made this character, you did not offer a pressboy hat. And I was just like, you know what? I'll email them, just see if this is something in the pipeline.
That was your request?
That was my request. It was not long after that this was added to the site, and I was able to update my miniature, and I ordered him right away because he was now perfect.
Amazing. That's the process and how it should work. There are certainly users out there who are like, I requested this really specific thing and it hasn't showed up yet, but we go based on volume and need. So you and probably about 20 other Hero Forge users made that request, and we're like, you know what? All right, we should definitely do that next. And, I'm glad we could satisfy your character there. But I was describing the kind of the process that gets Hero Forge art going, and I started at the beginning this survey, and that we really wanted to be just Hero Forge user driven. We've tried to listen to users every step of the way. So we'll take this data and we'll start planning out releases. We've been increasing the volume and quality of those releases every week now since we started doing Treasure Tuesdays many years ago. But generally, we'll plan like 3 or 4 months ahead. We're like, okay, we're going to get this theme out, and we'll start getting concept art done. And at that point, it kind of looks like a very traditional video game pipeline, where you go from concept art that, gosh, we'll have specific considerations certainly to fit into the character creator, but we'll try to get as beautiful and appropriately proportioned and detailed as possible. And then we'll get that sculpted, and then that will be made into a game res asset, which the website uses. So the sculpt is what gets printed, and then the website uses a cheaper, simpler to render version. And I'm vastly oversimplifying the pipeline here. because along with that, of course, you have, we need to say where the color can go and where the decals can go, and render a bunch of textures that create the detail and the lighting on the site. It's very extensive to get a part all the way through our pipeline. But my background in lots of ways was in pipeline optimization. Making environments at Naughty Dog meant you had to create vast worlds in ridiculously little time. So even though we were just dealing with characters, I put so much into optimizing our pipeline and boiling it down to a process that we could create art very quickly through. And I think that's paid off. It's allowed us to keep a throughput of content going, just that's only going to get faster.
So there are some requests from chat, and before I get to them, Param, can you just remind people how they can interact with us on Twitch?
Indeed, every episode of No Direction is filmed live in front of a Twitch audience. If you wish to participate and get some questions to us or our guests throughout the episode, go to twitch.tv/NoDirection every other Wednesday at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time to join in and ask. We will be gathering those questions throughout the episode and forwarding them on to our guest.
So I don't know how much you've kept up with Pathfinder, but in the last year, Pathfinder decided to blow up the concept of what an ancestry is. Ancestry being the Pathfinder updated word for races. And so some of the requests in chat, Jaina B is asking for a Leshy, which is a little plant person, but Kitsune Warlock is asking for a Kunrasu. Now,
oh, God. Let's talk about Kunrasu.
Right. Kunrasu is like an orb of cosmic energy that lands on Earth, builds an exoskeleton out of dead tree matter, and just kind of walks around with an unusual number of arms, no legs in particular. They are strange. Param, if I screen share right now, will that mess up our framing?
Go for it.
All right. Remind me how. It's in video?
I don't know.
Buttons, you don't know. All right. Well, then, Param, do you have Mwangi Expanse PDF handy?
Give me a minute. I'll get it.
All right.
Sorry, I was not expecting a Kunrasu to come up in this conversation. Honestly, this is the simplest model. Okay, this would be the simplest, like, not suggesting you do this one, but it's literally just a sphere that's allowed to have 11 arms.
Oh, 11, just 11 arms. No big deal.
Right. So while Pam's loading that up.
Six was not enough, I see. My bad. I thought it would be enough. I'm of course proven wrong.
So, like other ancestries they've introduced is the Poppet, which is the basically a doll or action figure brought to life. That is something I already know how to do on Hero Forge, but some of them, the Kunrasu specifically, and to a lesser extent the Leshy, are ones that at the moment I would find challenging. And actually, Grey Wolf just brought up, there's also Starfinder has a collection of very
They've done a lot of aliens. The Starfinder options already.
Oh, all right. Well, good. So
that's a great question. Let's talk about Kunrasus, or maybe more appropriately, let's talk about getting really wild with the number of arms and the possibilities.
Because I imagine a new race or ancestry option is a bigger ask than a new hat. Oh, and if you look at our Twitch feed now, that is the Kunrasu.
That is, oh my gosh,
that is playable. You could
play it. That's why it got weird.
Yeah. That might be a fighter, might be a wizard.
Is that an entire galaxy contained within the
Yes, it is, eye? Actually. Mm-hmm.
A small one.
Of course. I mean,
a concentrated one, I guess.
A tiny one, but it's all there. It's everything's going on in there. It's beautiful. It's so, what a wild abstract race.
So walk me through building that right now, please.
Well, let me tell you about some of the things coming down the pipe that may be helpful to that. And quite often, these more abstract, these unusual races can be hit by users who find very creative ways to combine stuff. And I'm going to give you the shortest path to a Konrasu right now. We certainly don't plan on doing a Konrasu race, but this is how I would see it going down. So bear with me for a moment. I'm going to start with how weapon kit bashing is done. So users will now take multiple arms with different weapons and combine the arms together in exactly the same pose. So weapons are now combined, and then they'll use the advanced posing to adjust the positions and create a crossbow that's half shotgun, half crossbow, or a sword that has epic axe-like ends to it. And there's some really beautiful weapons. There's some beautiful kit bashing. But our users have very much found this technique of smashing things together using multiple arms to be quite effective. Now, I guess I'll share my screen for this one because it's such a tease because I wasn't planning on showing this, but I believe if you're seeing my screen right now, I believe in my cart right now is an experimental miniature, and I'm just gonna do a little hover over and give you just a little sneak peek of that experimental miniature.
That looks like two miniatures.
That's not one miniature at all. That indeed was two miniatures in my cart there. And I cannot even imagine what our users are going to do with two characters when you can smash them together. And guess how many arms two characters have?
Eight.
In total, 12.
Wait, how many arms can each one have?
We can have six in total.
Oh, I thought you could have four. Oh, wow.
That's one spare arm, Ryan.
That's a whole extra arm. You could do anything you want with that. So we are, for example, we're working on basically tree-based people. So we're talking kind of wooden bark skin and foliage and sort of dryads and other creatures in that realm. So I imagine the very first Konrasus will come when two characters come out, which we should talk about because that's tipped my hand on a big deal there. when two characters comes out and you can combine two together, take all the limbs you want, and get kind of, you could probably get pretty close.
Now you introduced these option, like these ideas in a very good order, because had you just said you can have two miniatures on a base, I might have been like, okay, that's certain character concepts where I need two characters on one base. But when you reminded me that you can overlap options, and if you do this on purpose, you can create new effects. Now it's like, oh, and I could get a whole second miniature to mess around with? That second miniature is just parts, as far as I'm concerned.
It's going to be an explosion of chaos, to be fair. We're only slightly concerned about the Pandora's box we're opening.
I'm already imagining some of the really cool dynamic, like when it is two miniatures where like you have like two fighting rogues and one's doing a backflip off the other one. And that's when everything gets awesome.
Yeah. Let's take a moment to appreciate just that tech by itself is just the kind of the character interactions can be so beautiful. As soon as we started posing two miniatures together and having them hugging or holding hands or fighting back to back, it just created beautiful stories. And what do you want from a miniature but to tell a microcosm of a story about your character? Or characters in this case.
Jaina B says, dual wielding piano mimics.
Finally, what everybody wants will be possible. I mean, but if you can create a piano out of the advanced posing currently on offer, I can't imagine what's going to be possible with two characters.
And you're really starting to breach into a topic that I really appreciate from your company, which is you all could have been really boring and staunch and stodgy and stingy with the features, but still managed to make awesome stuff. But like the pandemic hit and we're not playing in person anymore, and you all threw out this awesome tokens, pose, pictures, throw my stuff into virtual tabletops. It's like, yeah, you all have like kind of taken what could have been a really great niche product and then just kind of made it into this all-in-one Uber character art tool that I use constantly. I mean, I buy a lot of Hero Forge minis. In fact, I've gone onto the subscription plan where I can download the, because I have a 3D printer at the house, so I've got the STL subscription, and that's how I get most of them these days. But I think I use that character art part of it like 10 times more often. Like, that's a daily part of my, I need to mock up an NPC idea workflow.
I'm so glad you found that much joy in all the features we've added. A lot of that comes from, we want them too. I mean, we do really listen to our users. We look at the survey data. We try to respond. We want to get tools out. But there's nearly 100% overlap with the kinds of features that our users want and we want. When the pandemic happened, we all started playing online. I was like running games online for the first time. And I was like, oh, I want this feature. I want this feature. It was kind of, a lot of them in lots of ways were no-brainers. Everybody was going to use them. We wanted them. And then we have just no plans on slowing down. Y'all, I'm glad you support the companies that keep innovating and keep making stuff, because we're gonna be that. We're going to do that. Ooh, what's this?
So this is my home, my Thursday's Games characters. I had them all log in, make Hero Forge models of their characters, and then got the, because you all now do the digital tabletop export, and brought them in. And so for three of the characters, I was able to actually get 3D miniatures. And the one in the back is just an NPC. And then one of the characters needed something that I couldn't quite duplicate. So it became a 2D token. But yeah, it's like the full color mini. They were able to completely customize it. I was able to throw it into Roll20 between combats. I had them, basically the GM said, okay, let's take a 10-minute break. I said, hey, we've been dragging our feet on this too much. And by the end of that break, all the little colored tokens we were using were replaced with exact matches for their characters onto the Roll20 table.
The tabletop simulator has just gorgeous rendering, and we're so happy to be able to support miniatures that you can just put right in there. And in realizing just the power of that, in being able to take your miniatures between tabletops virtually, we've now been working with Talespire and a couple of the other emerging 3D virtual tabletops to get Hero Forge minis in there too. So we really want you to be able to buy a mini and just take it between tables virtually now.
Speaking of buying a mini, I understand that you have a package that was recently delivered.
It just arrived. So perfect timing. Like I said, we also we also love Hero Forge. We make a lot of stuff because we want them. And this was a dear character that I played over the pandemic. We played virtually, so this is the physical manifestation of that character. His name is Ruffle, and yes, that is an acronym for rolling on the floor laughing. he was very much the classic troublemaking bard, and I had so much fun with him. And now, credit where credit is due. So this is Ruffle the bard. Credit where credit is due. Oh my gosh, sorry, I'm seeing him for the first time here, and it's a beautiful experience. it's very rare, even for me, to end up manifesting such a well-loved character who's had so much history. Credit where credit is due here. The Creators Guild, which is a Facebook group, posted a miniature like this, the bare bones for this miniature that I loved so much that I adapted into one of my characters. And we love that kind of that free flow of ideas amongst Hero Forge users. There's so much building upon, adjusting, adopting new characters. It's an incredibly shared creative process. And we're actually trying to develop features that can really aid that. Soon, there'll be a searchable library of everyone's creations on Hero Forge. So the flood of innovation that will happen will be palpable, I imagine.
So I know Masters of Hero Forgery. Which group were you talking about?
Sorry, there's a Facebook group called the Creators Guild. And it's you'll have to request to come in. It's
a wonderful
group. We run the group.
And I do want to show off here for a second. You all let me do things like save poses. So I was able to do things like export STLs of my favorite character in A poses, which I'm sure you know where this is going from here. And with Hero Forge, you're even able to get dancing miniatures.
I'm waiting for the day that someone makes one of the old school. Oh, never mind. Oh my gosh, was it so what?
Yeah, sure. I'll put it up again. I can't play the music. I actually synced this up to J-pop music. I just wanted to see what all I could do.
Amazing. That is a beautiful use of technology right there. And what? Those are some moves.
Earforge is great.
Amazing. Oh my gosh. What a treat. Thanks for showing me that.
You mentioned earlier, you mentioned in the pre-show that you had a story connecting G.I. Joe to Earforge, which, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Is Brian, of interest to me.
That's a lot of incredible G.I. Joe memorabilia behind you.
Oh, you noticed.
And I don't know, I'm sure you know this, but maybe not. There's a G.I. Joe equivalent in England.
Action Force.
Action Force might be a more recent name. Back in my childhood, it was Action Man. just a kind of a different spin on things, a little more generic sounding, I guess. So Action Men were big in my childhood amongst my school friends, and this is the very, very tiniest seed of Hero Forge, the little butterfly effect that rippled all the way to the present day. I asked my mom, as you would do as a 6-year-old child, I asked my mom for an Action Man. And she said, and bless her, she was so nurturing in terms of creativity. She's always like, here's all the tools you can imagine to create stuff with. And she said, why don't you make your own instead?
Nice.
And so being denied this toy that all my friends were playing with, I did. I paper crafted a articulating like Action Man. And it turns out that papercraft, surprisingly, is so similar to making things out of polygons. Polygons are just flat triangles when you take them by themselves. And papercraft is just flat bits of paper.
Yeah, absolutely. Like my first industry gig was doing the cut files for Fat Dragon Games' papercraft models. And I was like, oh, this is just polygons.
It really is. Could it's a dance? Very, very similar mindset.
But you can set them on fire.
Set anything
that's
on fire.
I know, but that's one of Tom's common demos when he was showing off the paper stuff. Like, and it costs nothing, and he said, "You can set it on fire."
I love bringing things like that into a D&D game. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll confess, one of my favorite things I've done is create maps with invisible ink. Invisible ink is beautiful as a reveal. It's the table that everyone's been playing on, you put up the UV lights and suddenly everything's changed. Ooh, but I will confess, nice. One that I didn't follow through on because I was a little too scared of what would happen. I believe it was a rainy day, so we were inside. I was running a game and the map, suspiciously, I was going to put on a grill sheet. And I'd cut this map up and I'd brought lighter fluid and I was planning on burning each piece of this map as some temple like went up in flames. And I, at the last minute, I chickened out. I looked at the fire alarms and I'm like, okay, we don't need this. but I had all the tools ready to go. I love that kind of just adding a little spice.
So I respect the ambition, but I also respect your survival instinct.
I set enough things on fire as a kid growing up, given all these creative tools, that I was like, all right, maybe I don't need to continue this trend. but yes, that Action Man kind of redirect by my mother was one of the very first seeds of, well, creating, even back then, it was like I had some interchangeable sunglasses and helmets that I made. So just a little tiny proto Hero Forge in some ways.
Very cool. So we are coming up on our hour. Is there anything you wanted to cover that we haven't quite got to yet?
Sure, I'll show a little more. I can share my screen again if that works for you guys. What I had up when I decided to redirect to that little test miniature that was in my cart, what I had up was the layered clothing, the first piece of layered clothing, which like was one of the biggest disappointments that we didn't hit for the Kickstarter. Users were like, but Hero Forge will never be whole. and we felt that. We also went past that stretch goal in the after sales through add-ons. And we also realized that we needed to do it now, or we'd be continuing just to add things to a system that would need to be completely revamped. So it was an incredibly time-consuming journey to rework these chess pieces to work as layered clothing. But I will give you a little demo. We've got now the under and over tabs, as you might expect. Yes. And you can take a different thing that you've got underneath and add all sorts of things to it. Just as you would hope. Now, of course, there's going to be a few incompatibilities as you try to put stuff that's maybe too beefy to go underneath something. But in general, there's like a wild amount of mix and match. And let me tell you, this is much, much harder than it looks, because you have to account for the interaction of hundreds of chess pieces, like top pieces, with hundreds of other top pieces. So right now, you're seeing that it kind of tucks into that bandolier.
That's more than I expected.
And that's a requirement for the interaction between the two.
Wow.
We're so glad we're going to be putting this out, though. And it's coming soon. It is. It's going to be a pretty much sooner than you may think. This first one, and then we'll do leg pieces later, and then we'll be adding more options into the system. This really, once we have this tech in here, it opens the floodgates for we can, without concern, add as many chess pieces as we want. So a lot of our goal is to be technology complete so that we can just go wild with the amount of art we add.
I would have been happy.
I'm going to have to carve out some time to update a lot of builds.
I imagine so. It's going to... I feel like the success of any one of our releases is sometimes measured by how many users say, well, guess I'm going through my entire collection again.
Your servers are going to be noisy soon.
Oh gosh, at least they've been well stress tested. So that's happening soon. And then what else did I have? I wanted to just do a little shout out to the latest pro feature we added, the ability to put basically numerical slider inputs in there. We're always adding tiny little features like this. Sometimes we don't even do a social media release. This is on no one's radar except for, you know, word of mouth at this point. There's a bunch of little settings.
Vitally important. Yeah, if I need to merge two characters to have 11 arms.
Exactly. That's going to be important. And then this was a photograph taken in our office of, and credit where credit is due again, these are Creator Guild creations that we looked at and said, oh my gosh, can we make a standee of that? We have to test print this. Like, we have to give it a shot, because they're all really, like, someone made a spider in Hero Wars. Oh my gosh. They're all so, like...
And it's frightening.
Incredible work. Sorry, I don't have the names of the original artists. These were originally just test prints for us internally, but I wanted to show them just because they represent some of the wildest things turned into standees, which do look just gorgeous. And I'll stop sharing my screen now.
Is standees a currently available option, or is that an upcoming option?
It is in beta. So if you are a subscriber, you can buy standees. And hopefully early next year, we'll be putting them out to everybody. There's a few like kinks to work out. There's a few calibration things that we're kind of working on. So we really want to put them through their paces. Thank you, everybody who's been brave enough to order them. I think you've got a lot of beautiful minis that you ended up getting. But of course, improvements may be made.
Jaina B in chat says, every time I think Hero Forge can't be more awesome, I am proven wrong.
Every time I think our users can't make something more awesome, I am also proven wrong. So let's continue to prove each other wrong.
And I wouldn't worry too much about that, because like, people who buy miniatures don't seem to have a problem of continuing to buy more miniatures, no matter how many exist in their closet.
We really appreciate that.
Well, a lot of the ones that exist in the closet are unpainted. So I'm curious, how has color printing been going? How popular is it as a feature?
It is completely dominated the scene for us. Like, being able to so fully visualize your character and then just have it come painted, given how few people actually painted their miniatures, this is huge. I notice that I got one in color.
Yeah,
because I'm too busy making Hero Forge to paint a miniature, and it's such a joy to get this fully complete piece of art. We don't, of course, want to detract from just the beautiful hobby of painting a miniatures. It can be so lovely, so relaxing. We'll always want to support unpainted miniatures, and I sometimes wish I had a little bit more time to paint some myself.
And then, but I hate to say it, because that is an aspect of it that I super appreciate the color tools. And honestly, what I use them more for is like testing color schemes that I will then paint later.
Yeah, being able to get a good reference. And we've also heard from a lot of professional mini painters who paint them for like on commission that they love Hero Forge as a tool because users can say, this is what I wanted to look like.
Nice.
All right. This has been a real blast, Deegan. This is a lot of fun. It's been really informative. And these previews are super exciting. So thank you so much for that. And thank you for coming on. Before we let you go, is there anything you want to shout out to?
Shout out to you guys for keeping this podcast going, for allowing me on. I really, really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure chatting. I've loved showing off the little sneak peeks of Hero Forge here. And then also a shout out to the Hero Forge team. Like, this is a collection of friends who have such passion and so much love for creating these tools, for making these tools accessible that like, it has brought me to tears thinking about how like lucky we are to work in that environment, to work with them, how lucky I am to know these people. So shout out to Hero Forge and our fans for continuing to support us. And then finally, a friend works at one of the most kind of wholesome things, I think, heroworkshop.org. They work with younger kids to introduce them to storytelling, to teach a bunch of skills. It is so wholesome. Hopefully we can get a link and check out their Patreon. You can support this adorable goodness in the world.
So I am only just hearing about the Hero Workshop, but I am looking forward to sometime tomorrow or maybe after the show diving into this because it looks like a really interesting site. And as a parent of a couple of young girls at this point, I am always looking for more creative ways to bring them into the game and hobby.
Wonderful stuff. Yeah, please do check out their Patreon and support where appropriate. We've loved just how good and pure tabletop role-playing games are in general. To sit around and tell stories with friends is one of the most beautiful things in life. So thank you for supporting it. We're going to continue to do the same.
Excellent. Well, once again, thank you for joining us. This has been a really good time. We're not done. We're going to come back with the news and the banter right after this.
And we're back.
In the Pathfinder news segment, we talk about all the latest happenings for the Pathfinder role-playing game from Paizo, from third-party publishers, from licensees. If it relates to Pathfinder, we are bringing it... You know what? It's been a while since we've done a news segment. I've actually forgotten what that spiel is.
We have a preset spiel?
Yes.
I didn't know.
What?
I didn't know.
You didn't notice 200 times in a row I've said basically the same thing when we come into the news segment?
I thought you were good at it.
All right. Well, thank you. Anyway, this is Pathfinder News. First bit of news is, it's an interesting development. So last episode, we had Eric Mona on to talk about Absalom, City of Lost Omens. And as soon as the PDF got into the hands of subscribers and freelancers, there was like kind of a unified, in reaction to how slavery was portrayed in Absalom. Specifically because there was an entire Pathfinder Society scenario that abolished slavery in Absalom. And this was specifically as an outcry to the fact that slavery was a Pathfinder Society legal option, and that left a lot of people uncomfortable. And the response to criticisms was that there would need to be an in-world event that got rid of slavery. And then there was. And then Absalom City of Lost Omens brought it back. So not as a free trade that it was before, but as something that is being done by underhanded underground slavers. So something that was posted to Owen Casey Stevens' blog is a post called From a Freelancer, an Open Letter to Eric Mona. Now, Owen didn't write this. Somebody sent this to Owen, and he published it anonymously in their name because...
No, anonymously.
Yeah. Right. Owen's not taking credit. He's making sure that it is known that this freelancer was worried about how expressing themselves would affect their status as a freelancer and like future job opportunity. But Owen took it upon himself, or Owen used his status as someone who is much more established and not likely to face the same kind of consequences.
And I want to make it absolutely clear. Owen is one of the most stand-up people I know in this industry. The man I trust the most in this industry, the man I think has some of the most integrity in the entire industry. So if Owen is putting this message out there And I have absolutely zero doubt in the anonymous choice here. Like that, you know, that should not be something used to criticize this message at all. Because if Owen is vouching for this message, then I absolutely trust it.
And if I came off like I was criticizing,
no, I apologize. This is okay. There's a lot of hate in response to this news item that has been circulating.
But like Kitsune Warlock says, he gave them a platform. That's right. Owen used his platform to give voice to somebody that does not have the same exposure as he does. Makes incredibly good points, personal points, and is very well written, expressing why these are issues, how they were happy these issues were resolved, which as, again, Kitsune Warlock points out in chat, it was not just a scenario. It was a multi-table event. It was one of the big specials for the season. A big deal was made about the fact that slavery was being abolished in Absalom. And so for it to be backdoor brought back into the setting, that for a lot of reasons was kind of cringy. And so this this message was put out there. Owen put himself in the line of fire. And to Eric Bonus' credit, he responded, possibly even the same day. He responded on the 13th, or at least it was, so on the same day, Eric Bonus responded, acknowledging that he understands, that he sees the problem, tries to justify what he was thinking, but ultimately acknowledges that going forward, he says, we plan to remove slavery from our game and setting completely. We will not be writing adventures to tell the story of how this happened. We will not be introducing an in-world event to facilitate this change. We're just going to move on from it, period. Now, he admits that because of the way the publishing pipeline works, it might be several months before this change is fully instituted. So if in the next couple of books there's more references, this is not him going back on his word. This is just a reality of how long it takes to move the ship in that direction. But
we've talked We've talked about on the show many, many times that they're working on today. They're working on books that come out next year. And a lot of those books are being printed in China and on their way here. So, a lot of these things would be near impossible to or financially ruinous to try to edit and get any and all of those references out. But this, I just wanted to put that in context. So strangely, a car outside my door.
In your backyard?
Yeah, that's weird.
That is weird.
Yeah. Moving on.
Just to summarize, this is kind of a nice conclusion to an icky moment in what has not been a icky-free year for Paizo and Pathfinder. Right. And so for this one to be so definitively addressed, and for the change to be so specifically detailed, that is nice. This was a much better resolution than we've seen for a lot of the other issues that have
come. Right. And honestly, I think for a lot of people, especially a lot of marginalized voices that are trying to participate in this community and voices that we have said before we desperately need and have precious little of and feel not welcome in this community at times, the concept of slavery at all is painful and can be traumatizing. And, for a lot of our audience, maybe they don't understand or don't have that personal history or connection or not traumatizing. But for a significant chunk of the player base, any mention of it at all would be as traumatizing as involving rape or sexual abuse or child endangerment or things that we already go out of our way not to bring into our games. And in this situation, the delicate ways to possibly handle these discussions is really in organized play, especially, or in a published shared world that a lot of authors are going to need to participate in. They're not easy. They're not often possible, and in this case, just total removal of the topic from publication is, I also believe, the responsible choice to go forward. I mean, when you are causing harm, you need to just trust the people that tell you you're causing harm and stop causing harm.
And I have seen the argument that it's if it's the bad guys, it's not such a bad thing, but it's the whole of the situation where it wasn't just the bad guys at first and it looked like it was gone, and so for it to be creeping back in, it's like,
right,
who is it that loves the concept so much that they are really trying to do what they can to keep this to keep this as a major setting topic?
At one point in time, it was possible to sit down at a Gen Con table with a player character that owned a slave, and you can't avoid that in organized play.
So Raising Rune Lords in chat is asking, how long ago did PFS slavery abomination abolishment arc take place. It came out August 18th, 2017. So it's a few years old now. It's not like this book was written without that being considered, without that being canon.
And in fact, a lot of the references in Absalom, City of Lost Omens, is in response to that event and then developing it into more plot lines.
Which, as the reply said, those plot lines will not be explored, and that this is going to be a hard turn away from any further content related.
And future printings of Absalom will have a content wink about it up front.
Speaking of printing, or I guess just the publishing world in general, we've got some news from Savage Worlds, from Pinnacle, about the Pathfinder for Savage Worlds.
It's been hit hard.
It's been delayed. So the quote from the Savage Worlds Media Network is that between the shipping container shortage and the massive volume of goods making its way to the United States right now, that they have been priced out of the market. The container that was originally planned to ship all of the Pathfinder for Savage Worlds products went to higher bidders. And this isn't just specific to Pathfinder for Savage Worlds. There were some other product lines that were affected by this. I believe a Flash Gordon RPG that they're putting out. In any case, relevant to our listeners, if you were interested in Pathfinder for Savage Worlds, which I believe was our first interview of this year. Anyway, it was one of our early interviews this year. It's it crowdfunded early this year. It was successful. It was supposed to have shipped by now. Shipping is a situation. And unfortunately, that situation has affected the availability of Pathfinder for Savage
Worlds. I hate to hear this. I hope that eventually we'll be able to get our books. Like I pledged in the whole hog on this one with the big Uber set. So I'm, because Savage Pathfinder is really, really appealing to me. Savage Worlds is one of my favorite games. Pathfinder is one of my favorite settings. This chocolate and peanut butter seemed perfect for me. But I can't really be angry about this. Like, I understand the shipping reality right now and the razor thin margins that game publishers are having to operate on in any particular situation. We have not seen the last game manufacturer go out of business because of these events. And I'm hopeful that, everything goes well for Pinnacle and Savage Worlds.
And I listen to a lot of, economics podcasts, and a regular topic over the last year has been the shipping situation, where just it is so valuable that some ships are dropping off cargo and then leaving without the cargo that's supposed to go back the other way, because it's more profitable for them to get another load in China and bring it here. Like, there's just so much money is being thrown around and is on the line in the shipping situation, that a hobby like ours, a fairly niche hobby, and this is a niche within the niche, it does not have the same clout of Walmart and Amazon that are also competing for these same shipping containers.
They have posted up that they're going to hope that after the holiday rush, they'll be able to afford a container. I'm hoping that's true, because it does seem to be holiday rush plus shipping shortage made critical mass of I don't get my cool book.
You don't get the print copy of your
cool book. No, I've got the PDFs already. It's glorious.
So, I completely sympathize with them. I have no dog in this race. So for me to say that it's not that big a deal or it's understandable, I understand how some people want to throw that back at me, but it's just, it is the reality. It is so much the reality situation right now. And in fact, so the dog that I do have in the race is that this is also something that's been affecting Renegade Game Studios and the publishing of the Essence 20 role-playing games. Not the publishing. Publishing has already happened. The Power Rangers game has been published. But whether it gets printed into their hands, yeah. Because even sometimes they get to United States shores, but do they get offloaded? If they get offloaded, do they have somewhere to go to be warehoused while they're moving? Because there's several steps in this process, each of which is being majorly impacted.
Like, I know, like, just personally, something I've been dealing with today with the hurricane situation, not the hurricane, you said hurricane, the tornado situation in Kentucky that happened. It was on the other side of Kentucky from us. So my school is like, you know, lots of people sending aid. Just sending stuff over there is hard, to the point that we're literally taking our trainer trucks and sending them, because just getting trucks and truck drivers is hard. So we're sending hours.
You're saying you're on the other side of Kentucky, like that puts you out of range, but like, we had winds in Montreal that were a result of the Kentucky, not hurricane, tornado. Yeah. The local skating rink, the outdoor skating rink, the boards were blown off by the winds we got from your tornado. So being on the other side of Kentucky does not put you... Are you apologizing for a tornado, Param, just because it's a Kentucky tornado?
Yeah.
Well, apologies.
I have to apologize for a lot that comes out of Kentucky lately.
All right. Well, if you don't hold our... there was like the cold snap last year that was being blamed on Canada. And it's like, it's Canada's weather. It's not Canada. So anyway, You're returning the favor now.
He's just putting the Destro mask on and wah-ha-hawing the Weather Dominator. That's not a toy behind you at all, is it?
Nope. Miniature Weather Dominator. Well, Farum, let's move on to some positive news. We've got a couple of Humble Bundles. Pathfinder and Humble Bundle have been a partnership that has worked well for a lot of people. They are the first RPG company that had a partnership with Humble Bundle, and it really like springboarded into it being a whole new category of Humble Bundle, new several years ago at this point, and just Pathfinder continues to put it out. The latest Pathfinder is, one of the two latest Pathfinder Humble Bundles is 100% second edition material now.
Right.
It is I believe this is the first time that it has been a, yes, the beginner.
And it is not 100%. Pathfinder
second edition beginner's bundle book bundle.
And it's nope. not 100%. Ah. They threw the Starfinder core rulebook in there as a bonus at the highest tier.
Oh, okay. But it's 100% Pathfinder second edition as far as the Pathfinder content goes.
Right, yeah. So you're going to get, at the all-in tier, you're going to get the core rulebook and the bestiary, a physical version of the beginner box. You're going to get the world guide.
Which there's more about that in a second.
Mm-hmm. You're going to get the entire Abomination Vault adventure path. You're going to get a crap ton of Pathfinder Society year one scenarios, the pawn collection, a billion maps.
You're also getting the Abomination Vault pawns.
Yeah, you're getting the Abomination Vault pawns, which is cool. You're going to get the GM screen, the Sundered Waves one-shot, the Troubles in Atari set. Like, this is a lot of great content for getting started in Pathfinder. This will get you going.
Yeah, so in the past, there's been, the tiers have kind of been a little head-scratchy, and sometimes it's like, you technically get a lot of good stuff, but if you're not going in the all-end tier, you're just kind of getting piecemeal parts of collections. So this year, or this particular one, feels like it's being a little less manipulative in that way. But the all-in tier really is a solid selection. I'm going to bring attention to, what is it? Sundered Waves. So on Twitter the other day, I just asked if we did like our top five products from Pathfinder this year, what product would be foolish not to mention? And a couple of people, including Jason from What Do You Do Pods, listed Sundered Waves as one of the best products that came out for Pathfinder this year, which blew me away. This was like, I knew the one-shots were something that Paizo was pushing, but I had no idea that it was such a well-received line, and that product in particular was a highlight of that line, to the point that I'm trying to organize a game to play in it now, because it sounds like it's really good.
Times. It's just a one-shot.
All right. It's just a one-shot.
Yeah.
But, you know, one-shots could be 3 hours, but if you embellish, they could be like 6 hours, so it could be a two-shot.
And that's not the only Pathfinder bundle.
There was some follow-up news. Wait, before we get to that.
Okay.
There was some follow-up news about the beginner box that is included in this Humble Bundle. Paizo posted on the Paizo social media. They said, the ongoing Pathfinder 2nd Edition Beginner's Box Bundle from Humble Bundle is such a success that the physical Pathfinder Beginner Box is temporarily backordered. Never fear, we have more on the way. There will be a slight delay in physical order fulfillment while we restock. In the meantime, PDF fulfillment is not delayed, including the digital copy of the Pathfinder Beginner Box. So you can still dive into learning Pathfinder as soon as we have more information, we will update you. And then there's also an interesting caveat that is, if you already own the physical Beginner Box and don't need a second copy, you can choose to not have the box ship. Or if you want to send it to a second person, you can provide that person's address for the physical box. So if you're getting into this for the PDFs and the Beginner Box is low priority for you, let Paizo know, because there's some people that are getting this for the Beginner Box, and physical copies of the Beginner Box are in high demand at this point and low supply.
And the physical Beginner Box for second edition is actually really nice. And because it's like the first time we've got a Beginner Box that doesn't cut the system, like the first Beginner Box and the Starfinder Beginner Box both present slightly simplified version of the rules that merge skills together, merge ACs together, is not really the same game 100%, that you then have to learn those differences when you step up to the full game. Whereas the Pathfinder 2nd Edition Beginner Box, like, it definitely trimmed down the options to choose from that you would choose when making your characters and playing the game. But those characters are still 100% legal choices, and you do not need to learn the differences on how to play the game. You will learn actual second edition full-fledged with that Beginner Box.
So I used the Beginner Box when I was teaching Scarlet to play Pathfinder, and things like color coordinating the dice to rules on the character sheet was super helpful. Having a full selection of pawns is always good. Like, I believe the first time we saw Pathfinder pawns was in the first Beginner Box, and that really was such a successful part of the Beginner Box that it created a whole new line from Paizo. Just they've gotten good at making beginner boxes, and this is the best beginner box they've ever, bar none, para.
And then there's the other bundle, because Pathfinder has two bundles going right now, technically. The other bundle is the Pathfinder First Edition bundle for Fantasy Grounds. They're calling it the Ultimate Bundle. And it is a lot of the Fantasy Ground options, most of the core rule books. Is all the core rule books? All the hardcover line, and basically the first part of a giant chunk of the Adventure Paths.
All of the...
The MC and three bestiaries, but not six. Okay. It's not full.
No, there's... Some of them are missing.
Yeah.
But actually, you know what? I don't even know if they're all out for Fantasy Grounds yet, so it might be everything that's available at the moment on Fantasy Grounds. No, it's called the GM Kit for Pathfinder. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, Fantasy Grounds is a really good digital tabletop, virtual tabletop. It's been around for ages and been upgraded several times. It was always like the premium choice back when it came out, very skeuomorphic, having good interfaces, high-end graphic design back when stick figures were acceptable. Like WebGM was the other option that you had to work with, and now it is pretty nice. The new version is great. I know that D&D is super popular on it. The 5th edition, when it moved to Steam, it's available on Steam. And it's fairly easy to use, but it is on the pricier side of things. But I guess not if you buy this.
What is the all-in price? The all-in price is $64.08 Canadian, which whatever is, that amounts to.
$50 US.
I figured it would be much rounder. Brought up Essence 20 and the Pathfinder role-playing game earlier, so there's another bit of news I'm going to talk about there, and that is that we do know when early access PDFs will be available. So if you have pre-ordered the Power Rangers role-playing game from Renegade Game Studios, the exact shipping date and the exact release date is what I'm mm-hmm. of the Power Rangers role-playing game core rulebook physical copy is tentatively January 26th. If you have pre-ordered, you will get the PDF 2 weeks early. You will be getting it
12th?
On January 12th, exactly. Mm-hmm. So every other way that you could play with the Power Ranger role-playing game, so the physical copies, the Roll20 digital tools that will be available, that's all coming out on the 26th. But the people that have pre-ordered will get the PDF a full 2 weeks early to get to know the system, play it with friends, or just learn it so that you can GM it and learn the adventure that comes in it. It is finally a firm release date for one of the Essence 20 role-playing games, which just means that all of the shipping situation has been dealt with enough that Renegade finally feels confident in listing a date. And this will be probably the last time that we'll mention Essence 20 in New Sigma No Direction. But just like when we were building to the release of Starfinder before we had No Direction Beyond, it fits in here right now. There's crossover.
I'll stop saying Essence 20 news when there's an Essence 20 podcast for us to say that news on.
So we can announce, we figured out the name. Or should we save that for Patreon's private
site? Let's save it for... No, we promised we wouldn't tease things. We promised we wouldn't do that. So go ahead and say it.
So we're Essence 20, if you remember, the skills are not bonus numbers, but bonus dice. So if you have a D2 and a skill, a D4 and a D skill, a D6 and a D skill, and a skill, etc., you roll the D20 plus skill die. Mm-hmm. And there are modifiers that give you bumps up in the die. So if you have a D6 and a skill and you've got favorable circumstances, you get an upshift and it becomes a D8. And so we are naming our Essence 20 podcast the Upshift Podcast. It is the No Direction Network's Essence 20. I don't know if it's going to be news, reviews, and interviews, or if it's because it's the reviews. I don't know if we're going to technically be reviewing these books since I worked on the system and I'm an author on at least one announced book that's coming out for it right now. So it might just be the news and interviews podcast. But yes,
Upshift, previews.
The No Direction Network's Essence 20 previews. Ooh, nice.
News, previews, and
I actually really like what we've been doing the last year of breaking down. And that is the news, Param. And for once, we've got a little bit of free time. Do you want to talk about PAX Unplugged?
I do want to talk about PAX Unplugged. I went to a convention, Ryan, with real people and bad hot dogs.
Oh, how bad were the hot dogs?
They were all right. They dry. Felt like I pulled them off of a 7-Eleven roller. Steven Glicker bought me a pretzel. It was much better.
Oh, nice. Numbat18 says, biased reviews are fine as long as they are stated as biased. So the news, biased reviews, and interviews podcast.
Oh, what was this? Go back to one of our old slogans for No Direction, the completely biased Pathfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast.
We never denied it.
Nope.
Anyway, so PAX Unplugged, yeah, you talked about Stephen Glicker, you talked about good people in person.
So, like, PAX Unplugged happened, and they had very strict vaccine requirements. You had to have both doses of the vaccine and 2 weeks ago, so, like, they would have to be at least in full efficacy. Masks were absolutely required throughout the whole convention and heavily enforced. And like big security checkpoints, there was dogs. It was a little bit intimidating getting into the convention, I'll be honest with y'all. They did do this really cool thing where there was like a pre-checkup app that you could do all of the paperwork stuff with ahead of time, so that all you had to do was show them like you already did the screening, beforehand and get through the line quicker, which was helpful. But you know, hey, safety things aside, I then got to see actual gamers in person again and see friendly faces, familiar faces, getting recognized a lot more often than I thought I would with a mask on. That was a thing. It was still hard to walk through the hall without getting stopped a few times. But that was great because I got to meet so many of, so many fans, so many other colleagues. I met Eli from Deadly D8. So that was cool. There was like the vendor hall was incredibly spaced out, like intentionally so that there wouldn't be elbow to elbow traffic, which was a smart choice. Like, very much this was a convention happening with the knowledge that there was also something terrible happening and trying to mitigate as much of that as possible. So that was also a thing. So everything was spaced out. I had to walk a little bit more than I was used to get around anywhere. There was definitely a lot lower energy than before. There was like, it was like half the size of last PAX Unplugged. And PAX Unplugged was already kind of a small convention. It was like small, but exciting and great. It was like a third of a Gen Con.
So yeah, that's the thing. Cause I mm-hmm. went to the first two PAXs, which being PAX Unplugged, I should say, which we're talking about 4 years ago now, because there was two, then there was the first year you went to, then they skipped a year, and then there was this year's.
Right.
And the two that I went to was fairly sparse and fairly spaced out, and they had a whole hall for the vendors, and then half of the hall was just seating for open gaming. So there was room to, you know, room to grow. I didn't go to the third year. So just based on your experience with the third year, how much more spaced out are we talking about?
I think, like, there was about half as many vendors taking up the same amount of space. Like, there, you know how you go to a Gen Con and there's like that 5 foot, 6 foot wide aisle? These were like 15 foot wide aisles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they made like every booth was an island basically unto itself. And they still had like the billion free play chairs and the gigantic game library. That part was still wonderful. The check it out, play it. But this time there was also the check it out, play it, check it in, desanitize it workflow was going on there. The big giant cones of, hey, it's time to come play, like looking for players. So I did a fair bit of my convention this year was the just random gaming, which is great. Something that's harder to set up, because they had a facilitating, because PAX Unplugged is very good at getting players to seats without prearranging. So that was still great. But where it really fell down was the seminars were very few and far between, and none, like the only ones I was interested in, I had to double book otherwise. So it was like last year and at most conventions, the seminar room is like where I spend a good most of my time, even when I'm not being paid to run a stream from it. Because that's like really where I'm interested. I want to talk with the minds that create these things and hear their thoughts and hear where the industry is going. Less of that this time. It was, there were still some good ones, but not nearly as much. Role-playing. Last time, board games was dominating the convention and role-playing was a part of it. This time, role-playing was it. Like, role-playing was 90% of this convention. And like the line to register for the role-playing game wrapped around the building. So that was weird. It was definitely probably a surprise to them as well as to how quickly those numbers shifted post-COVID. So that was great to hear that our hobby. Flip side, not a lot of Pathfinders present. Very little Pathfinders showed up in the vendor hall or in the registered games. So D&D 5 was still like the leader king here, but by leaps and bounds more than I'm used to seeing at a convention, where PFS usually has a good presence. A lot of indie RPGs was just all over the place. Like, this was like the place to find indie RPGs if you wanted to get into a game that way.
Yeah. And then Pathfinder and PAX Unplugged has always had a strange relationship in that they've attended all three up until now. They didn't attend this year, but they have not sold anything. They set up a booth that is just running demo games in the vendor hall, and then they also had some organized play areas elsewhere. And I don't quite understand why, at least by the third year, they know whether they want to sell or not. Like, I'm not sure exactly what the goal is for Paizo, PAX Unplugged in the past.
Don't know. That'll be an Eric Mona question, unfortunately. And I'm unfortunately not Eric Mona.
No, that's all
right. But I did see some really cool stuff. Excellence is getting an expansion. So, hey, that's great to hear.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And the big thing that seemed to, I latched on to, that seemed to explode on our Facebook post about it, is the new Robotech RPG looks glorious and awesome. And everybody seems to want to play it now that we've posted about it in our fandom. So, hey, I picked that up and I'm quickly learning it. It's really cool because it uses like a almost Fate-based skill system where your character is entirely defined by the skills you know, not any other stats you have. And the skills are very narratively named and used. So you have things like Elegant Grace or Rapid Fire, and all of these things apply. Each skill is used in three different contexts: combat, social, and adventure. So, and you, and it gives like examples of, like, they come with advantages that using this has mechanically and disadvantages that using this has mechanically. And then you kind of have to move with the flow narratively to kind of explain how that applies to the situation at hand. And it works out surprisingly well when somebody is trying to, like, do a Gish Gallop argument and is using rapid fire to just throw BS at you so fast you can't refute it.
But what about the mech fights?
Also mech fights.
Okay.
Lots and lots of glorious mech fights with missiles for days. It has also has a fun thing where, like, the players get to pilot their mechs, but if you're the commander on the deck, when you use your command skill, it's how well the NPCs are doing.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I like that. So you were said it's the new Robotech.
Yeah, this isn't Palladium. Palladium lost the license, and this crew picked it up, and I forget the name of the crew, so I feel bad about that, but I picked up the books. I picked up the Geom screen bundle, even has the themed dice, and I barely resisted buying the cardboard cutout SDF1.
So how new were we talking about? This is the first
I think it came out last, obviously. I think it came out the end of last year. So like right in the middle of COVID, when this is the worst time to launch a thing. They're coming out with the second book, which is what they were there to show off and take pre-orders for. The first book is Macross Saga. And then the other two sagas will be in the second book. And then I'm hoping, personally, because with the new licensing deal that got signed for Robotech and et al., we finally have actual Macross is licensed to come outside of Japan for the first time ever that isn't in the form of Robotech. So I'm hoping that with that we'll start seeing the other billion seasons of that show that have not made it stateside getting adapted, because that stuff continued all the way to this day, just we never got US releases of it.
Sorry,
like as of a couple of years ago, a new season of Macross came out, and it's kind of,
wait, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought this was long done.
No, they are actively making new seasons of this show.
I find publishers of new Macross, the Robotech Macross Saga RPG. There we go. I finally found the website. SMG Games.
Cool. Yes. They also have like a deck building game and stuff, because of course you do when you license a big property like that. You release all the games.
So you played it. You haven't had a chance to jam it yet?
Right.
How do you think it'll jam?
Very well. It's very narrative styled, and I like narrative style games. This is definitely like leans heavy into this makes a great con game category, because it's easy to explain a character sheet, run some pre-gens, and just really just go off the cuff with your responses. This will be a glorious podcasting game too. Like it's got that kind of elements of simple system, mechanically strong on the narratives, the descriptions of what you're doing are as important as the numbers behind them.
And what's the tabletop situation? Would you need a virtual tabletop for it?
Okay. Like, you can do this completely theater of the mind. Though, I mean, if you wanted to do miniatures, it would to adapt.
I know you played a couple of other games. You played Final Girls.
Final Girl was great. I love that. It's a single player board game that is sold in a really weird format and is super fun. So Final Girl, you have to buy the core Final Girl game, and you cannot play. If you just bought the core game, you can't play it because
that
doesn't
sound like the core game then. That sounds like
the
core
it's product. All the common pieces where you then have to buy a Final Girl pack, which includes a monster and the Final Girl you're playing. And for those who don't know, the Final Girl is the usually protagonist or final surviving girl in like an 80s, 90s slasher movie, horror movie. So like think of Nightmare on Elm Street. Yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis, perfect Final Girl. You're hopefully the one that will live to the end of this horror movie, and you need to save as many people along the way as you can, and powering up and learning to defeat these horror movie villains. And the core box has like all the basic elements you need to play, like the basic board and all the basic cards that all of the Final Girls share. But it doesn't come with a girl or villain. So you have to buy a girl or villain pack, which has like the unique actual board you will play on, and the villain and their cards and the girl and her abilities and her skills. And they each play drastically different from, it's almost like playing a completely different board game each time, depending on which pack you get, using the core game to kind of run the system. I do think that, like, personally, I would have preferred if there was a girl and a villain that came in the core box, though. But it does mean that you get to pick the one you want to play most, or buy all of them without having to double up on components. And they're $20 each. So core book is the core set's 20, and then the girl packs are all 20.
So you said it's one or more players, or it's
exclusively just one
player game.
It is a one-player solo game, and it is incredibly fun.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
How was it demoed? Like, someone was just helping you with rules?
I was not interested in it, and my friend Chris, part of my local game group, who went with me to the convention, was super into it. Actually pre-registered to get a demo of the game, played, then bought the game, and then showed me how to play it that evening, and that's how I got to play it. It was a blast. So it's like, it uses like this terror track that's constantly going up, and you're having to make decisions on like, let's rest up a minute and refocus, and like walking and sprinting, and all these are actions that you can choose, but you have to plan in advance. And you roll to see if you succeed, and you're most likely going to succeed, but there's always a chance you don't. And all the cards of the actions you want to choose have the appropriate thematic cliche failing point of sprinting. Oh, oops, you tripped. The monster gets closer. You take an attack damage, and fun things like that are happening. I played against the Freddy analog. So it was like cards kept popping up, like it's getting so sleepy. And then like, not all the cards that pop up are bad. Like I popped up one card when I was fighting Freddy, not actual Freddy, but fake Freddy. That was like that
Dr.
was
called, Fright?
Yeah, Dr. Fright, which was the Lane. Card. Yeah. On Maple Lane, which the card was, if this is a dream, then I can. And then it let me move my character anywhere on the board and summon any equipment item from the deck and just attack Freddy instantly. So they really got the feel down. They did a great job emulating the source material, and the end jokes are perfect. The art is great. The components are all high quality. The boards are all like super magnetized and then fold up into each other and then stick together and look like VHS deck cases slid onto the shelf. They have it perfect. Like, my only gripe is that you have to buy them separately. But it's cheap. It's only $20 for the core set and $20 for the each of the girls. So it's not like it cost a lot of money. $40 would be a steal for a board game of this quality, honestly. So I do highly recommend checking this out if this is a topic that you might be interested in. And it's real easy to find players for.
How many different girl sets are there?
I saw at least three, but I think there's more. I wasn't paying attention when I went to the booth to grab it because I was told by Chris is like, hey, you're going back out to the show floor, pick up Final Girl with the Freddy set. And so I went there and they had to explain to me because I didn't quite understand how you buy the game. And then I bought the game exactly what Chris wanted and then brought it back to them.
So Freddy, I'd imagine there's a Jason. Is there a Mike Myers or is Jason and Mike Myers too close?
I saw a Freddy. I saw a Jason for sure. I think I don't want to guess at this point because I don't know the answers to this, but there was at least three and I think there were more.
There's room for a Chucky.
And the game does support changing girls. Like comes with girl, villain, location, and all three of those things can be mix and match. So you could fight Jason with the Chucky girl at Maple Lane.
Nice.
And all of those things change the variables on how it plays. Also, each of the locations spawn like a random setup, and I got the block party setup. So instead of everybody in their houses and spread out, it like literally had all the NPCs in the center having a party when the killer shows up and just goes nuts.
So Kathy replied to your post that it sounds like a game for her, and I definitely know that the theme is for her. I don't know if a solo game is up her alley, and I wonder, like, I'd like to watch Kathy play the game. And
yeah,
I don't know if Kathy would be up for that.
I think that you can play this solo, but I think the fun time is playing it two people playing it solo together is actually where the fun of this game is. And I've already been like brainstorming ways to make this a true multiplayer experience because like that would be fun. I have guarantee that in the next near future, as successful as this was, like they were selling out of most of the product at PAX. So I know that lots of things were not available when I went to buy it the second day, not even the third day. And I'm fully expecting Final Girls to come out as like the co-op expansion or something.
Just checking to see the publisher. Van Ryder Games. I do not know them, and I would not be surprised if this is them.
It was very hard to find their booth.
Oh, looks like they've got a variety of games. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Got a hostage. Cool. Anything else about PAX Unplugged you want to shout out to, talk about?
I also, of course, had a different agenda besides the Katie agenda down there. I was looking for like 3D print stuff. So I met up with Titanforge. Who is one of the major players in 3D printing minis. They made not 3D printed minis that were glorious before 3D printing was a thing, and then they shifted. And now they're sort of shifting back. Well, they're double shifting. Basically, their big thing was, we're going to have physical cast versions of all these 3D printed minis in our game that we made for it, which is called Bloodfields, which I finally got to play. It was the game I pledged the Kickstarter for, which was all digital, print it and play a game. And they had physical versions of the game, and I finally got to play it because I figured, hey, might as well learn how to play this game. It's fun as heck. I love it. It's a really good small skirmish fantasy game that's really got like just enough meta and is really fun. It's a lot like playing, if you played Warhammer Underworlds, it's a lot like Necromunda? That. Kind of like Necromunda, but you have like your characters all have, each character is named and has unique special abilities that you activate throughout the turn. So similar to Necromunda, if everybody in Necromunda was Space Marine powerful.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was really fun. Great playing it. And they were selling actual physical sets. They gave me a copy of the starter kit to show off on my other show when that happens. But like, if you don't have a printer, there's, you know, selling copies of the miniatures now that you can just get that were fairly nice and better than my printer can make. I have to.
Now, are they selling them on demand, or is this, it's blistered and it's available at a game store, or it's in a
blistered
box?
Wow. You can buy it off their website, or I imagine they're trying to get it distributed
now. I wonder what they like. It's expensive to get into miniature manufacturing.
Well, they were a miniature manufacturer first.
Yeah, that's true.
So this is a familiar land for them. And these all appear to be resin cast, which is like the cheapest way you can enter the miniature manufacturing world right now. So like I do 3D resin printing, which takes the liquid resin and prints it one layer at a time with a big mechanical arm that moves up and down. Resin casting is you make a mold the traditional way, fill it with resin, and then you get a mini.
Yeah, that's what Banner's built. So I have some familiarity with 3D manufacturing far more. Are we ready to wrap things up?
I think so.
All right, we'll be right back to wrap things up right after this.
Wrap-ups and shout-outs. Wrap-ups! Wrap-ups and shout-outs!
And we're back.
Thank you for joining us for episode 265 of No Direction, the No Direction Network's Pathfinder News, Reviews, and Interviews podcast. And thank you to Tegan Morrison, the CEO of HeroForge, for joining us for a fun, lively, informative interview. And I don't know why HeroForge doesn't do more interviews. That was great.
That was great. I love it. Honestly, it's one of the better HeroForge interviews out in the world, and I hope people know about it.
All right, cool. Well, get the word out, especially if you what to do on your other podcast. But if you were to shout out to this episode, I have a feeling it's relevant to your listeners.
There's zero chance I won't do that.
All right, good stuff. But first, let's get some shout outs to things that we think people should be paying attention to. First, I like to give a couple of network shout outs, starting with a couple of blogs that came out in the last couple of weeks. Today's edition of More Lore, Scott D. Young's new blog, is called From Backstory to Campaign, and he talks about taking a map of Galarian, drawing a line of the journey your character took to get to wherever the campaign starts, and then creating your backstory based on the journey he took. And it was such a cool idea, because we know that Galarian is a kitchen sink fantasy setting, and so if you want the Transylvania style background, you can just set your character from Ustalav, even if your campaign is not set there. If you want a sci-fi barbarian, you can say you're from Numeria, but those countries are like next to each other, and so if you were born in Numeria and made your way through Ustalav on the way to Absalom, you've got an interesting journey.
Barbarian laser wielder.
Yeah, or you show up with your laser thinking like, yeah, I have the most powerful weapon in the world, and it's useless against vampires, and you're like, I gotta get out of this weird place. They're way too advanced for me and my space technology life.
They're secretly the best, and the vampires have to undergo a conspiracy to hide laser swords from the world.
So what's cool about that is that you can actually make kind of mechanically a mishmash character that you have a totally like a literal through line for, because you fully understand how all of these things are connected. And it just like, it really opened up the idea of how a character can be themed around the world at large rather than a chunk of the world. So shout out to that. That came out today. Again, it's More Lore from Backstory to Campaign by Scott D. Young. And the other thing I'm going to shout out to is Dustin's article from last week. Fox's Cunning, Ranking the Runes Weapons Edition. So Dustin periodically does these articles that just ranks a chunk of rules. And in this case, he is ranking the weapons runes. And I'm not super familiar with the rules. I don't know what I should be taking for what character. And for the most part, my second edition characters have been lower level and have not proceeded to a high enough level that picking runes has mattered. But I'm getting there. Like, that's surely going to be something I should worry about soon. And by now, there's a lot of runes in the game, because there are a lot of books that have introduced several runes. So having this as a resource, like, you know for sure the next time that I have to go shopping for a character, first thing I'm doing is pulling up this article and reading it over. And since this is Weapons Edition, I suspect that before long, we will also have Armor and all the other runes editions. And I will be using each of them equally. And I suggest, if you are not entirely sure what you want to do with the magic items for your characters, check out what Dustin wrote in the last week's Fox's Cutting.
Yeah, and honestly, like, a lot of Dustin's articles end up being pages I bookmark because I need to reference them frequently. The summon decks is like one of the best things that in existence for a PF2 spellcaster, because summoning is so great in PF2. And the runes are wonderful as well. And with PF2, the runes are super useful because you can swap them between weapons, so knowing what's what is extra important, because PF1 found this really cool sword. Anybody use sword? No. Everybody specializes in weird random stuff that's all exotic? Yeah. We sell this for half price. Whereas in PF2, just scrape that potency rune right off there, slap it on your weird chainsaw axe, then we're good.
As someone who has had a chainsaw axe, and you know what? It would have even kind of diminished the fantasy of being the one guy with a chainsaw axe if I came across somebody with a better chainsaw axe to loot their body afterwards. So no, I'm glad I could just fight somebody with their broadsword with a weapon rune and slap that on my chainsaw axe and improve like, while still feeling unique.
I can see these words like, oh, huh, yes, of course that was the plan. My shout out was also going to be something for Dustin. It is Dustin hosts these streams on Facebook that are really great, and one of the streams he does is the card bestiary, where he takes a magic card, he opens up a random pack of magic cards, pulls out one of the critters, and then makes a Pathfinder 2 stat version of that critter. And it's fascinating to watch because Dustin knows the game design so well and how to write for Pathfinder 2 better than most people out there. And so you've got this expert designer that Paizo hires themselves to write product. Just like, let's see what this random magic card bear is going to need stats for. And then you get this really cool stat block at the end that you can use in your games. It's great content.
Yeah, the booster bestiaries. I don't know if he's got a set time for them, but he tends to advertise when he's going to go live in the Share the News segment of the No Direction Discord, which this would be a great time to transition to the shout out to the Discord and stuff. But I also wanted to talk about the last episode of Legend Lore. Legend Lore episode 37 was the Pathfinder products year in review. And Luis and Lauren had me on. They invited me on to just talk about Pathfinder products from 2021, which it was a very last minute thing. So I had nothing prepared. And yet, the products that came out this year, first of all, they all stand alone so well, and they were all super memorable that even without much, without any kind of planning for this episode, I was totally able to carry my conversation, explain why The Winding Expanse is such an amazing book, why Guns and Gears is something that's really a great book for me. And really, the one surprise from the whole episode was that the Ancestry Guide came out this year, that the Ancestry Guide is a 2021 release. I know, Param. Luis assured me that the Ancestry Guide is a 2021 release. So, Dustin in chat is saying that he does Tuesday, 6 p.m. for Booster Bestiary, Friday, 4 p.m. for Infinite Reviews, and these are Pacific Standard Time for him. But anyway, yeah, so the latest episode of Legend Lore, it's a chill chat between me, Luis, and Lauren, just some amazing people. I just geeking out about Pathfinder. Oh, and Dustin is returning the shout out by saying it was a good listen. Can't believe how many books came out this year. It was a lot, and they were great.
Another shout out I want to give that's kind of circular there is upcoming interview. Luis Loza is going to be on a Deadly DA interview. They don't do many interviews, so, and Luis is awesome. So go check that out when it comes out.
Like what Deadly DA does, where they, it's something that YouTube, I think, introduced in the last couple of months, the premiering, where you pre-schedule a video that's going to go up. And so I'll often be excited to see the content, disappointed that I can't watch it now. But then when it does become available, I get excited again. And so Deadly DA is very good about doing that kind of thing. So I saw that Luis is coming. I believe it's coming out tomorrow at 1:30 Eastern, sometime in the middle of the day. So I'll probably check it out tomorrow night after work.
So after, if you listen to this on podcast later today.
Yeah. All right. Well, Param, I guess we should do a programming note that this is my last regular episode of the No Direction podcast. Next episode is our holiday special, which is tentatively scheduled for two Wednesdays from now. But here's the thing. That would be December 29th.
Okay.
If all goes according to plans, we will have a live recording similar to what we did last year, where we're swapping in people. So not like the year before that, where we did pre-recorded segments and you edited it together into a very fun holiday special. That was a great idea, but that was more out of needs than out of desire to do a pre-recorded episode. Yep. The 29th is a bit of a weird beast in that if we want to do pre-recorded segments, we can't because Christmas is that weekend and we're not likely to have availability. 29th is far enough from Christmas, except if people are traveling to see their family. So I don't know what everybody's availability is. And I've been saying for the last 2 weeks that I will start planning this episode ahead of time so I'm not doing it last minute. And now we're at last minute and I have not started planning the scheduling of this episode.
Yeah, so it'd be great if somebody was pre-planning using some special software that would let people drop in and out without interrupting flow of the episode.
Is somebody doing that? Isn't somebody awesome?
Yeah.
All right. So, well, I will start doing my end of it probably tomorrow of scheduling, getting people signed up for when we will be doing their different segments. Because I really liked it last year. Last year, for people that don't remember, we did like 10-minute chunks with a 5-minute overlap between guests. And so we got to chat with everybody a little bit exclusively and then have fun dynamics between different members of the network, which is up around 25, 30 people at this point. It's hard to keep track.
Especially since it keeps changing every week.
Well, not every week, but yes, the last couple of weeks. Scott, Nate, and Michelle were the last three additions. The full roster. We've got a guest blogger coming on 2022. We'll figure out future. So yes, so something is happening in 2 weeks, even if it's just you and I, but I expect it to be one of our holiday specials.
And you know where you need to be if you want to find the last year's holiday special or any of the other amazing content here at the No Direction Network? Network.
Where?
Over at NoDirectionPodcast.com. And while you're there, you can find the Discord link where you can join the chillest community to chat about Starfinder, Essence 20, Pathfinder, and all the geeky, nerdy stuff we enjoy. And of course, if you want to chat about miniatures and stuff there too, you can totally hit me up in the painting area. I'd love to talk about that stuff anytime. Also, lots of anime gets talked about over there now too, so that's also but also, if you are a patron, the show is not over. We have the after show, the after party, the patrons private sanctum. And if you're one of our patrons and connect your Patreon account to that Discord account I just told you about, then you can join us right after the show, and where we will talk about whatever you ask us to talk about.
Until next time, or not quite. Well, anyway, I'm Ryan Costello.
And I'm Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Param.
If you want to find the bath, you